Hello and welcome to Label Sessions Presents, the podcast where we talk to the most interesting people at all the things you need to know in the world of innovation, business, design, tech, and culture. I'm Fazlin Iso, and today we're joined by two brand new additions to the Label Sessions expert roster, as well as Nick Sherrod from the Label Sessions team. Hello and welcome, everyone.
Hello.
So a big welcome to Devalina Dasgupta. Devalina turns leadership ambiguity into cultural clarity, guiding global transformations with empathy, strategy, and guts to say what others won't. Welcome to the podcast, Devalina.
Thank you very much, Fazlin.
Also a big welcome to Sally Poinsett-Nash. Sally builds brands from the inside out, turning leaders into the living, breathing expression of what their company stands for. Welcome, Sally.
Great to be here. Thank you so much.
Is it time for the return of hardcore work culture? So the boss of AT&T has issued a memo to staff telling them that it is time to grind, returning to office 5 days a week, or to seek new jobs. PwC are tracking all employees' time in the office, and traffic light turns red if they're not there enough, with consequences for their roles and progression. In China, people are paying to go to offices and work in pretend companies because they just want the feeling of community and purpose. Is this a welcome return to a decent work ethic after years of decline, or is there's something going very wrong in work culture? Are we, you know, hitting that sort of infinite work week again? Devalina, I think, again, this is probably right up your alley in terms of
very, very close to my heart. And I'm happy to kick off. And then, you know, Sally, Nick, and Fazlin, you can join me. And incidentally, Fazlin, I've also done a very deep piece of work at HSBC on hybrid working analysis, and partnered with other external partners to figure out, you know, what the best strategy is. And I will maintain the fact that it has been and it will always continue to be a game of a balanced approach, right? When we were just coming out of COVID, I remember a narrative which was extremely powerful but equally short-lived, that, you know, now that we are out of COVID, we should be able to at least try to retain the best of both worlds. You know, there were obviously best things that we did pre-COVID, but we overdid a lot of things which we understood during COVID. But also, some people have dragged COVID a lot longer and stayed completely at home, and which probably would have hurt some companies in terms of how they would want to drive their culture. So, you know, I would say that in organizations where, you know, we are in a very polarized environment, either extremes of the spectrum, I would say it is a huge leadership failure, right? And I would say that, you know, we have spent a lot of time not addressing the right issues at the right time, nipping other problems around understanding our workforce, engaging our workforce in the right way, which is now biting us back, right? And therefore, when you see the one extreme of attendance culture, you know, your performance, like, you know, I was reading the notes that you shared, and companies that are saying that your appraisals, your performance reviews will be based on how many hours you clock, and there's a machine to measure that, you know, you are absolutely creating another devastating wrong example of culture, because you're not understanding the composition of your workforce, which may have different individuals with different preferences, priorities, and choices. And once they have seen what the breadth of options could be, a sudden introduction of this change could sound very, very awful. And the other risk that they are not understanding is that while we are comfortably using this word, phrase employer's market, yes, indeed it is, but not at all levels. Let us understand this. You know, younger talent and emerging talent today, because of a wrong working culture, are not even willing to stay in the corporate industry, right? They're wanting to become entrepreneurs. And there's a huge narrative in the social media around why you should never join corporates. So if I'm an employer, I would take that with a grain of salt and say, hey, we need to talk about a about our culture, and we need to really figure out what, and you know, back to the same point around customer-centric business models. This is an employee-centric business model where a prescriptive strategy is not going to be working. It has to be a strategy of a direction based on empowerment. So I will leave it as a starter on that, and let's hear from you guys what you feel.
One thing I just have on all this, which is I just think companies have become really bad at making definite choices around what they want their culture to be, right? There are companies that work very successfully with a kind of really hardcore culture. There's a bunch of stuff that comes with it in terms of how you pay and incentivize people and types of people you recruit and all those kind of things. There's companies that are much more relaxed in one sense that can work, but I just feel like there's kind of companies are really bad at talking about it openly. And the example that's in the notes for this around the PwC piece, where they've got this kind of traffic light system for time in the office, there is something they've maybe missed in that story as well, which is, you know, my old company got acquired by Deloitte in a big consulting system for a while. The business model of those businesses is based on attendance, right? They sign people up, they kind of sell people in to attend client offices normally. So there's some choices they've kind of made, or they maybe need to make if they're going to follow through that business model. But I kind of feel like companies just aren't very comfortable talking through the fact of who they want to be, what kind of culture they want to go for, and therefore the choices they make around, is it important that you attend, or is it important that you just do the work from different places? I feel like there's a choice-making thing we've just got, people aren't comfortable enough with.
Yeah. And Sally, before you start, just so that I'm not misinterpreted, I just wanted to mention that probably using the right phrases, right words are very, very important for a narrative for the employee, right? When you say attendance, you can be attending a workplace but not be present, right? So when you say it is collaboration driven and purpose driven and meaning driven, that is the narrative you kind of, you know, drive, and not say that you have to be there.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, the most of the work that I do is within those big management consulting and financial services firms, which is the polar opposite to how I run with my team. I'm probably not the person to ask about the, if you're looking for support of the hardcore work ethic culture. I'm a huge advocate of remote work, and my team is fully remote from London through to the UAE. And I just think when people can live the way they choose to live, it brings so much more to the time that they're working. I think I've had two very personal examples of how fragile and precious and short life can be, and therefore, you know, having this remote model around me, I'm based between London and Cornwall, and I'm constantly on the road for client work. But I think forcing everyone to fit to a one size fits all is never going to work for anything. I mean, as human beings, it's the, you know, difference is the beauty in our species and the fact that we're all wired differently. I'm an introvert, and ironic given the work that I do. But I'm an introvert. And I remember back in the day with the rise of the open plan office, it was like my worst nightmare. So I'd like my door back, please. I don't want to sit with everyone. It's very noisy. And I just think that this one size fits all, tracking people, monitoring people deliver their best work when they're seen, when they're heard, when they're valued. And when an environment is created that's flexible, I get there are going to be times of the year where people have to be in and doing things, but that doesn't need to be a rigid model across the entire firm.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really interesting that point, Sally, just quickly around office design, which is now it's slightly different parts of the world, but there's lots of offices now which are hardly ever full, and yet have still been designed as these kind of open plan environments, as if it's the kind of like it was pre-pandemic, when you're desperate to try and find desk space for everybody, and you were kind of and also open plan is now way worse because everyone's on calls all the time. So you kind of either have people like into little booths so they can do the call, or you get like noise melding into each other. I think there's for those companies that have chosen a hybrid or a physical office being important to their operation, like someone just needs to reorganize it. We're still designing these things like we're trying to design WeWorks from 2019, there is just something about actually how can, if you are going to have physical spaces, you know, and to your point, if they are, if physical space is supposed to be the good place for collaboration to happen, then why don't we redesign the spaces to be good for that kind of work?
Made me smile because I remember being in a client office in Milan, and I took a, I had someone take a photo because the privacy screen, I'm 6 foot two, and I was donning a pair of heels and the privacy screen came up to my waist. This environment's for me.
Yeah.
So, you know, I Sally, absolutely love what you said on, you know, what works for a human brain and what doesn't, right? If this must come gives you a compliance kind of a feel, right? Which will never bring in commitment of an employee. And I can, you know, I'm just, as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking of some great leaders who I've seen doing this really well and not, and some who are not. So, I think, you know, as a leader, how you manage your diary these days makes a lot of difference on this return to work, right? For example, I think it was Gartner who came up with this research on, how emotionally, what is the degree of emotional volatility in a conversation and how complex is the decision making of the in the conversation. That could be two great examples or metrics in terms of a leader deciding which meetings they would want to have in person in the office and which ones they would want to have remotely, right? If you really care to look at your diary in a way that when you are in office, you have a flock of people, you know, huddling up around you, excited, thinking that they're serving for a common purpose. They have a sense of belonging because our global people survey have said that people who have a greater sense of belonging are much, much more willing, happier, and excited to come to work on their own rather being pushed, right? So I think that because, see, going to work today is utter serendipity, in terms of whether you will meet your colleagues or not, unless you are absolutely planning your day and calling up and asking people, are you going to be around? Are you going to have this meeting in person with me? There have been points of time where people have gone and got disappointed seeing that, you know, nobody's there to talk to them and they have plugged in their headphones, worked the whole day, gone back home without talking to anyone, right? So I think while I say leadership, but, you know, when you see leadership role modeling these right behaviors, your team naturally kind of start absorbing these behaviors and doing the same thing.
I think often there's a, you know, there's that generational gap between how what work should look like and what work could look like. So even if that leader is modeling, this is the version, it may not align with those, that younger talent coming in.